Hello, and thanks for checking out the Tabletop Champions podcast. This is Kyle, one of the co-hosts of the show, and I just wanted to give everyone a heads up that our early seasons of the show were a lot rougher from an audio quality perspective, and while we're still quite proud of how those seasons came out, we don't really think this is the best place to actually start the show. We strongly suggest jumping all the way ahead to episode 145, A New Adventure. This is the starting point of our season 4, which is a whole new world with whole new characters that exist entirely independent of what comes before it. So it's a great place to jump in, learn the players, listen to some audio after we figured out how to do this whole recording thing, and it's just a perfect place to jump on. And we think that's the best place to jump on. The earlier seasons are still filled with action, adventure, and an awesome story, but the production can be a bit rough to manage from time to time. But if you're caught up and want to explore the back catalog, we recommend listening from season 2 first. That's episode 50. Then going back and listening to the rougher audio, which is mostly season 1, which of course starts at episode 1. And then finally you finish off season 3. It starts at episode 98. Those three seasons comprise the complete story of Irulan, the world we explored in first. We find ourselves, however, today in a whole new world. And we're excited you're going to join us for that journey. Thanks.
Humanity has battled with evil throughout the ages, fought tirelessly to protect itself from being consumed by the monstrous horrors that plague the land. But as darkness grows, the flame of hope grows dim. Who shall rekindle the fire? Who shall save us?
There was literally bags of poop thrown around.
Multiple times.
I forgot about the bag of shit. Jesus.
Well, hopefully a bunch of douchebags with dice will do the trick. A bunch of nerds gathered around their screens, drinking and dungeoneering in hopes to get some gold and girls. Join them for a crazy adventure. These are the Tabletop Champions.
Hello and welcome to the Tabletop Champions podcast. We're a new podcast. We're a 5th edition real play Dungeons & Dragons podcast. I have players with me tonight who are named Scott.
Hello.
I have Ben.
Hi.
I have Kyle.
Hello.
And we have Wade.
Roll it up.
That's a good one.
I was going to steal your other greeting. Damn.
All right. Oh, I was going to steal it.
Damn. All right. Well,
But
I could actually create these at will.
Yeah, just the entrances, and then we'll keep stealing them. So, like I said, we're a real play 5e podcast, and we've been playing for how long have we been playing now, guys? Like
since November, I think.
Since November, yeah.
Currently
so
May.
Yeah, so yeah, we've been going for 6 or 7 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, it was before the DMG and like right after the player's handbook came out for 5e.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're still getting along with the rules like everybody else in the world, you know. But we've come quite a ways. We've gone through quite a bit of the campaign, and we're going to give a brief little overview tonight to kind of get everybody caught up and get you guys on par with where we're at in the game. So I think that we'll start with character introductions so you guys can explain who you are, what you look like, what it is that you do, and we'll go from there. So, who wants to start? No one, all right.
I can start, Sean.
All right, go for it. Go for it, Scott.
Hi, I'm Scott. I play Paris Mithilmir. He is a high elf who comes from the land, or the kingdom of Lalandi. Which is the elven kingdom within this world that we are playing in. Paris is a cleric with the light domain, and he worships the goddess Saonin. Let's see. Paris is 5'10". He's really slender in build. He has long, silvery white hair, which he pulls back into a braid. His face is very stern and angular, with like really pronounced cheekbones, almond eyes that are blue, just very standard elvish fare, I guess, for looks. I wear scale mail in a leaf pattern, and a dark blue cloak. And I have a shield with a crescent moon on it. And I also carry a curved elven blade called Alf Miravor, which I received, has been passed down through my family from my grandfather, who was a highwayman and stole it off of somebody hundreds of years ago. Not really sure where the blade came from, but it's been passed through the family. As sort of an heirloom, despite the fact that it is actually a stolen property. What else can I tell you about Paris? He
likes long walks on the beach, and he likes to talk about himself a lot.
He does. I was gonna get to that. So Paris is very, like I said, he's a cleric, so he's very devoted to his faith. He's proud, he's arrogant, and slightly elitist, and he has delusions of grandeur. So throughout this campaign, we've gathered some land and titles, and that has given Paris a very inflated sense of importance, which is always at the forefront of everything that Paris does nowadays, much to everyone's chagrin.
Except right. for mine. This is where I jump in.
Yeah, Devin and Wade kind of have this inter-party fun rivalry going on. So, Wade, why don't you give us an introduction on your character?
Hello, my name is Wade, and I play Devin Silverton. He's a tiefling who grew up in the main city of Avisac in a brothel, if you can believe it or not. He was left there as a baby because the person who left him thought it was a church. It was a church. Now it's a brothel. Called the Queen's Loins. Let's see, what else? When he was about 18, he got into trouble with law for sleeping with the law's wife. Law tried to beat him up. He kind of burned their faces off. Then he started training as a sorcerer. And after that, he got called to a certain city, and that's where stuff happened. He's a tiefling, if I didn't say that, with the blood red skin, the black hair, and yellow eyes. He keeps himself clean shaven and a short haircut, and otherwise clean all the time, because that's what the ladies like.
Devin loves the ladies.
If you couldn't tell. Let's see. He also thinks everyone is equal, and anyone who tries to prove otherwise deserves jokes or worse. Looking at you, Paris.
Alright. Alright, that's a good one. I think that's it. It's really fun to watch Paris and Devin's kind of fun little rivalry go on. Devin also likes to burn things, so...
Yeah, dragon blood and demon blood tend to have that effect on someone's psyche.
So, alright, then we'll move on to Torin.
All right, I'm Kyle, and I play Torin Beery Dinar, TBD for short. I am
a joke
that I have committed to my character, and it carries forward. I am a dragonborn fighter. I'm a kind of a big, beefy fighter type, with a deep bluish green skin, scaly skin, obviously, since I'm a dragonborn. I have deep dark blue eyes, mostly because I, when I get mad, I can launch a lightning bolt out of my face, which is always fun. So I originally come from the area right outside of Yenpool, which is known as a slaver city. In an attempt, I don't know if we decided or not if I was officially a slave and escaped or not. So I'll say I was. I was a slave who has escaped, and I spent a lot of time kind of wandering the woods as an outcast. So I'm not always the most pleasant to be around. I have kind of a little bit of I don't have a lot of. See how to say it. I'm just not a people person. It's probably the best way to say that. I have a tendency to drink heavily, both in and out of character, during our sessions. Let's see. I can hold my breath for 5 minutes. Very important. hasn't actually come up in this yet.
I actually think he has a thing for green ladies, right?
I like the non-human esque ladies, mostly because I'm large and scaly, and you know, they're more my speed. I wear a big thing of ringmail, have a huge, gigantic, cursed axe that can cause me to go into a blind rage. Occasionally, I'm seen wearing a beautifully polished, jeweled crown. That I may have stolen from a bank I robbed, but you know, YOLO. And and I also have a magical jug of booze, which will come into effect at some point throughout the campaign.
You're also very racist against goblins.
I am racist against goblins, but then also sort of high and mighty and anti-slavery. So I'm conflicted in general. We've invented two different racial slurs for goblins in this campaign. So you'll either hear gobbers, or more accurately, fucking gobbers. And occasionally I'll refer to them also as gerblins.
Oh, and if someone's ever being racist towards Torin, they will call him a slickback, which is a racial term for a dragonborn.
And will cause me to go in a blind rage as well.
I think it should be noted here that this entire party is very anti-racism. I was going to say we're all very anti-racism in the party, and that actually the entire party is a motley crew of sorts. Because yeah. Sean, in this world, elves are hated.
Hold on. We'll get to that. After we get Ben to give his character introduction, I'm going to give a brief overview of the world.
Okay,
but before Ben starts, I forgot to tell everyone what items I have. So do you want to do that now or later?
No, go for it.
Yeah, I have a shiny set of bracers, which help me block stuff. I got a magical belt that's also a skirt. And a magic wand that lets me hit things harder and faster. So, yeah, that's cool. The things I have.
Oh, and you have your handy haversack that you use for literally everything in this campaign.
Hey, it's not my fault you give me a lot of shit.
That's okay.
And I also like to fight without a shirt on for some reason.
I don't feel like that's
actually... There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever known that.
Yeah.
All this time you've been fighting shirtless, and we've never.
Yeah, noticed. I'm gonna start making you take an action to take your shirt off before combat.
Except in the cold.
Except in the cold, and then so the last person we have is Ben.
Hey, I play Stark. Stark is a half elf paladin with the Oath of Vengeance. When he was younger, he lived in an orphanage and got into fights all the time. So, the people in charge didn't know what to do with him. They had him join some paladins who were walking by. You know, he was really enthusiastic about it until he found out that there's more to being a paladin than just killing bad guys. But you know, he went through his training, and at the end, you know, before he'd like almost completed his training and everything, his order was attacked by cultists who killed everyone other than him. He only survived because he chased one cultist off in the middle of the woods, and he came back and everyone was dead. And his mentor gave him a fragment of the relic that they were there to guard. And he carries that with him always.
All right.
Yeah. And I guess I should say he's 5'10". He's got like dirty blonde hair and green eyes.
He's a very humble paladin.
Oh, yeah. You know, he just got a... I mean, you know, definitely hasn't told the bard to tell everyone about how awesome he is, but...
So... one thing we should also mention, and unfortunately, guys, we do have to bring this up because it goes with telling the history of everything that happened. We used to have a fifth member of the party.
Who
shall not be named, who is no longer with us, but we will call his character Nightbreeze, just to reference things that have happened. And we're also...
I just want to clarify that he's not actually dead. It sounded like the person who played died. He didn't die. So just clarifying.
Also, it should be clarified that Nightbreeze, the character, is not dead either.
No, Nightbreeze, the character, is not dead. The person who plays him is no longer around, though.
And I called Nightbreeze the King Killer.
Which we will discover.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
So, for story's sake, I'm going to give a little background on the world that we're in. So, this world is called Irulan. It's a massive, massive, massive world. Many cities, many different locales. And the players who play in it can go anywhere at any time, do anything that they want. I'm never going to deviate them from doing things that they want, which is sometimes to my dissatisfaction, but that's all right. The world of Irulan is 450 years prior to the campaign was racked by war. As we've learned a little bit through the campaign, which we'll get to in a bit, there were five chosen heroes that were tasked with saving the world 450 years prior, and they only succeeded partially. And now, these new group of adventurers are kind of learning more about their fate, which we'll hear as we go through stuff. The world is extremely racist, especially against elves, which everybody decided to be an elf for some reason, which makes it kind of fun. And yeah, so there are also six major gods in this world. The six major gods are Corallon, Sehanine, and the Raven Queen. Those fall on the neutral to neutral good side. And then there's Torog, Vecna, and Sahir, which all fall under the chaotic evil, except for Torog, who is lawful evil. And you'll learn more about those as we go through the campaign. I don't even think that the party knows much about them, so I don't want to reveal too much.
Oh, come on. You could say a lot more than that.
Nope, I can't. I can't do it. What else, guys? Could you think of anything else about the world that...
I think you used to call the war the Great War, and it was the Widowmaker's War.
Yeah, so there's actually two different battles with that. There was the Great War, which was the one with the five adventurers, and then after that, there was a battle for property rights and ownership of land throughout the world, and different kingdoms fought and battled to try and stake their claim, and it all culminated in one last great battle called the Widowmaker's War, which hundreds of thousands of people died. And after that, there was a king that was voted in, and everybody decided that it should all be united under one king with a different representative from each area of the world to come and discuss rules and laws that govern the entire world. This is called the Council of Nine. So the Council of Nine discusses what laws should be made, what things are plaguing different areas of the world, how that should be handled, because basically instead of it being ruled as different smaller empires, coming together as one collective seemed better at the time. And that kind of seems to be falling apart. The houses, or the areas that are ruled, are... And I'm going to run down some characters real quick. Sorry, give me 1 second. I'm trying to pull up my map.
Some of these people may or not be on our side.
Yes, and we'll discuss that as we go. So the areas of the world are Polara, and I'll have a map on our website, which is tabletopchampions.com. Polara, Hewald, Leodor, Solia, and Landy. Those are the major continents, and then it's kind of subdivided from there. I won't go into too much description. The major players that you as listeners need to be worried about at this point are... So, on the Council of Nine right now, House Dawntracker is from Polara. So, House Dawntracker is on the seat. House Blackwood is on the seat. House Eagleman has a seat. Avakua has a seat. And Silvari has a seat. A few the other ones that were added a little bit later are House Kassab, which has a seat, House Amberstein, which has a seat, and House Stormpipe, which has a seat, and on top of that, the King sits the council as well. So those surnames you'll probably hear thrown around a decent amount, and the characters have met some of them, if not all of them. Some of them side with the adventurers, some of them don't.
Sean, may I ask at this time if House Dawntracker is still called House Dawntracker?
It is not.
We'll get into that later, though, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's sure. Another thing we're going to have to discuss in the campaign on which it's because it's going to be your surname, but we'll get into that in a bit. So, okay. And to go from there, the main city in the realm is Avisak. That is the capital of the realm. And anything else you guys can think of for a little context before we get started?
Devin's hometown?
Yeah, Devin's hometown is Avisak. He's the only one that's from the major city. Everyone else is from elsewhere. All right, so I think that we'll just kind of dive into a brief little history of everything and get caught up to where we're at and go from there. Okay, so let's go into your guys' adventure. So prior to this adventure, all of the characters had received the notice. What was that guy's name?
Elide Carbuncle.
And I'm trying to find and kill that guy.
Which there's another thing that you guys can figure out with that later. But Elide Carbuncle sent them a note. Basically, it all had different intentions, but it was all trying to bring them to a city named Lorisia. All the adventurers showed up in Lorisia, waiting for whatever each one of their notes said. You know, it all had different, it was a job offer, or Paris was offered a position at the temple and things like that. So all the adventurers were brought there, and then all of a sudden a shadow overtook the land as they were all there, and they all went unconscious. That was the last thing they remembered before they all woke up in a very dark space, confined not together but independently. They still have not met each other at this point. And they woke up to find a light emanating from their chest. Torin decided it would be a good idea to try and bust out of this confinement, and he found out that it was a massive funeral for many dead people in the town. And at which point...
They I was all, also knocking an infernal.
Mm-hmm. And out of the 3,000 people that were there that had died, only 5 had made their way out of the coffins. No one else was living. Something brought these characters back. And
if I'm not mistaken, we actually busted our way out of the coffins, correct?
Yes. You busted your way out, and then people around the town started freaking out, and they started opening coffins to find, you know, their loved ones still dead in the coffins.
Yeah.
So at this point, the adventurers are confused. Attack ensues by someone wearing a outfit that is similar to something that Torn would have recognized as Yenpool, being from Yenpool. That person disappeared and summoned some shadows for the adventurers to attack, which they dispatched. After that, they met a nice lady named Siliqui, who invited them to her house. Does anybody want to tell us about Siliqui?
There's too many mixed emotions right now.
I can do it. So we met Siliqui, who was a female elf. And also a powerful mage living in Lorisia. She spoke to us about the Great War and gave us some background information on the five heroes from that time period. And she asked us as a group if we would be willing to travel to the Lost City, which is where, correct me if I'm wrong, it's where a large battle had taken place during the Great War.
The Lost City was the area of the last great stand of the five adventurers. It was one of the great battles against good versus evil. And so she had sent you and asked if you would go investigate the Lost City and see if you could glean any answers from that.
We then met Sirik, who was the leader of the town guard, and he came to Siliqui's house while she was trying to talk us into going to the Lost City, and asked us as a group to travel to Avisak and to speak with the Council of the Nine about what we had seen today and to seek direction on how to proceed from here. And then we were...
It's important to note that he was extremely rude and arrogant.
Yeah.
And Devin was about to strike him.
Yeah, that's right. nobody in the group really seemed all that interested in listening to Sirik, except for Paris, because Paris wanted to follow the laws of the land, which would be to consult with the council rather than trying to do things on his own. And then we were also approached by the town the town priest, whose name is Victor Ingall, and he asked the group to stay in Lorisia and to protect the town in case more shadows arrived to destroy the town. And in the end, we decided to side with Siliqui, and the pretty elf lady, and we met her at Lake Avisak, where she summoned a magical airship, captained by a
sylph.
Pretty sylph lady.
Pretty sylph lady, which then flew us to the Lost City.
Okay. So at that point, you guys flew to the Lost City. When you got there, it was barren, but sitting outside was a small little caravan with a gnome named Bok Flittergrind, who told you a little bit about how some people would go in, even less would come out, but the ones that did had treasures that he would be trading for, and then he would go sell them on the road. So he told them that if they wanted to get in, they would have to go into the mountain right there. And so the adventurers decided to go into the Lost City. It was an old dwarven city, but in there was a statue to the god Torog, and beneath it was an entrance to a lower chamber.
And before we went into said chamber, I kind of vandalized it a little bit.
Yeah. Devin is not a fan of the evil gods. He vandalizes them with profane and hilarious things.
He wrote dick on it.
Yeah.
In draconic.
Just for the record.
In draconic. So,
and I think it already had other stuff written on it. In Infernal, it had written on it. Or no, in Common, it had Abomination already written on it. And then in Infernal, it had Place of the Righteous written on it.
Yeah.
So it just made sense to have something in draconic on it.
Yeah.
So the adventurers descended into this lower chamber, which turned out to be kind of, it's a dungeon for all intents and purposes. But what it is it was a place where people who followed the evil gods went to worship. They went through, they worked their way down, and at the end of a long tunnel, they found a crystalline portal. The portal was all green glowing crystal, but there was a crack down the center of it. And in front of it was a stone table with five stone figures standing at the table. They looked like they had been frozen in time. And they kind of looked at them, and around each one of those stone adventurers next, they found a talisman that had a triangular symbol with in each corner being the symbols for the three good gods, which again are Corlon, Sehanine, and the Raven Queen. These gods represent the cycle of Earth, or cycle of life. So Corlon representing spring, birth. Sehanine representing fall, late life, and the Raven Queen representing death. So it's kind of like the middle is open for your interpretation of living, and your actions during that time decide what happens to you in the afterlife. So the adventurers decided to take these pendants, and as they put them on, their chests started to glow again. So the adventurers ran under the assumption that they have been raised by this trifecta of gods to fight whatever evil scourge is in the land. Am I missed anything, guys?
No.
Yeah, one little thing. Two of the characters got special orbs in said dungeon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But those are gone now.
Yeah, but it's worth noting.
Okay, so in the dungeon, there was this black ooze trap that would drop these glass orbs, and if they would hit the ground and crash open, they would pop out with black oozes. So the adventurers managed to catch two of these orbs and keep them on their person. For whatever need, I'm not sure, but... Oh, it is important to note. Yeah, it is important to note. Good call on that. So, the adventurers leave the dungeon. As they're leaving, there was two talking dwarven stone faces in the walls at the entrance to this dungeon.
One talking, one broken.
Yeah, one talking, one broken. The adventurers repaired the broken one and were rewarded from the talking one a scroll that was spit out by one of it to give to the adventurers. And I'll post that scroll on our website so that you guys can take a look at it, because it's got a fairly important history note. But at the end, it basically just explained the prior adventurer's quest. It told them to find something called the Oculus so they could close the portals, and that the adventurers had failed the initial ones, and they were relying on these new adventurers to save the world. And the more important, one last important thing to note about it is at the bottom, it said, I'm trying to pull it up. Sorry, guys. There we go. Let that not go. It said, "May the three bless and guide you, Angrenar Mithilmer," which is odd because it's the same last name as our cleric, Paris Mithilmer. So Paris is kind of... doesn't recognize this name, or hadn't at the time, but it's not a common name. So, leaving the dungeon, the adventurers decided to go back to their ship, and they were going to fly back to... Were you going to fly back to Lorisia, or were you going to go to the Avisac?
Lorisia.
Okay. When they got back, their airship was destroyed, the Sylph Lady was impaled on the bow of the ship, and they found Bok Flittergrind wounded. Okay.
And his raised.
And his cart's raised and stolen from. So, anyone else want to take the next step?
Well, I know we healed Bok.
Some healing potions we found from his stuff.
Yeah. And we'll start blowing through this a little faster. Those were the important things to know so far.
We then asked Bok where the rest of his caravan was. Or rather, he told us to take him there. So we did. And we proceeded to meet up with... What is it? Gnome? Right?
Yeah, so we met up with a gnome camp. And when we got to the gnome camp, we had discovered that they had a small boy in a cage. So yeah, we met a small boy named Philly, who apparently had been bitten by a werewolf. And we decided to stay with the caravan in an attempt to protect them, because it was going to be a full moon. So I, as Torin, purchased a shitty silver sword that was in really bad shape, thinking that that was probably the best way to fight off them. So we ended up, getting it, surprise, surprise, we were attacked by some werewolves. We killed the werewolves, and we made sure that the boy Philly did not escape.
I think it was just one werewolf.
It was. When we murdered it, it returned to its human form, and we found that it was a young woman with the same slavish tattoos of Yenpool. So clearly someone from Yenpool does not like us. We decided to kind of stay with that gnome caravan and head with them towards Avisac, mainly because they decided to pay us ale and gold as payment for kind of protecting the caravan.
All right. So at which point they were following, going to Avisac, when a child was kidnapped. The adventurers decided to pursue the kidnappers and came across a tower with some goblins talking to each other, and it appeared that they had kidnapped this child. They could overhear them talking, talking about how they were going to get paid for ambushing the adventurers.
And this is the first time you see Devin being impatient and enacting his own plan.
Yeah, so the adventurers battle off the goblins valiantly, so I'm going to start glossing over some stuff just so we can get... bog people down with all this. The adventurers defeat the goblins. They found one of the goblins was going to try and release a message by Raven. The adventurers try to forge a message. They send off the message saying that the adventurers were killed trying to, you know, trick the recipient. They did, however, leave one goblin alive. Much to the dismay of Torin, who Wade took as his ward, and his name was Chu. And
I named him Chu.
Yep. And he's kind of a silly guy, but you know, some people love him, some people hate him. So they mount up with Chu and make their way to Avisac. About halfway there, they're interrupted. Their travel is interrupted by an envoy from the king coming to look for the adventurers, who are then escorted to Avisac. Once the adventurers reach Avisac, they got into a battle in the street with someone trying to release another raven who appeared to be a cultist. And when they killed this cultist, took... What?
We didn't kill it. We impaled his leg and interrogated him.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we killed his bird, and then for some reason, we tried to keep the bird for some reason.
Well, don't worry about that so much. But when we interrogated it, Stark held the cultist in place by impaling his sword through his leg into the ground.
I thought it was a wall.
Regardless, basically pinning the cultist to whatever with a sword in his leg.
Important point though, when the cultist was fleeing with the note, because he got to flee for a couple seconds, when they came upon him in the alley, he was casting something upon the note, which happened to be a curse, because when the ranger of the party, who was Nightbreeze, picked up the note, he resisted the curse. He knew it was on there, but he decided to pocket it, and he didn't tell the rest of the adventuring party about the note.
Because he survived the curse, he didn't care to remember that it was cursed.
So the adventurers were then brought through the city. They eventually were brought into an audience with the king, who is a very nice guy, man of the people, likes to drink, likes to have a good time. And they're discussing, he tells them all about, you know, Avisac and all that stuff, but... What ends up happening is Nightbreeze, the ranger, decides to ask the king what he thinks of the note, at which point...
Which is just king, like two words or something.
Yeah. At which point the king proceeds to touch the note, and he becomes cursed.
And falls dead.
So it looks like the adventuring party has just committed regicide. They are taken into custody and brought into the cells until they're decided what to do with by the council of now 8.
And now we have the king killer.
So would anyone like to continue to this portion?
We get thrown into the deepest, darkest cell they have, where not even light, where even dark vision can't see, apparently. And Devin,
look, Wade, I'm not perfect. No. I try and be a good DM.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, you made it that dark. That's kind of scary. And at several times during like the weeks, plural, that we were in there, Devin almost snapped and killed Nightbreeze several times.
The whole party was like, you know, inches from doing so, but.
Yeah, but I was the only one actually ready to do it.
Yeah, I suppose being a sorcerer, you know, you had your weapons with you at all times.
Yeah, and we did get them smuggled in with us thanks to some Order of the Raven bullshit.
Yeah, so
there's that.
The adventurers then had stuff smuggled to them, food and all that, with notes basically from something called the Order of the Raven. Order of the Raven, turns out, is a political movement that is by the people, for the people, doesn't want their decisions made by the Council of Nine, believes that there's a whole new shakeup in power, needs to be a shakeup in power, which is a decent political ideal. The problem is they choose to exercise it through violence. And either murdering the people on the council or whatever means to whatever end so that they can get this to happen.
Oh, but we're also visited by an elf lady while we were there. Not the pretty elf lady, but a different elf lady.
Mm-hmm.
I forget who she was, though.
Isn't that the councilwoman from Landy?
Yeah, it was the councilwoman from Landy. Yeah, she came to basically give the adventurer support on their behalf, to tell them that not everybody is against them and that there may be a way that they can save the king, and they'll be brought to the council the following day.
Yeah.
So the adventurers are brought before the council. There's a big argument on whether they should just be lynched on sight, you know, sent to the rack or something like that. So a lot of people are saying no, just to give the adventurers a chance, because the cleric believes that if the adventurers want to prove their innocence, they will also utilize the note, travel into the Shadow Realm, and try and save the king's soul. Because the adventurers are going to die anyway, they decide to go with that. And they get led back down to their cell until they're going to meet the king the following day. But at that point, they receive some lockpicks from the Order of the Raven, saying, if you escape, we will help you flee, and you can work with us towards a greater good.
No, this is the point where Devin almost killed Nightbreeze.
Yes. Because
he really wanted those lockpicks.
Nightbreeze really
first.
Torin was also on the side of lockpicks, primarily not because he was excited to join the Order of the Raven, but because he is not a fan of being imprisoned. And anybody who offers him freedom, he's ready to join.
So,
but Devin got the lockpicks first, and he was ready to literally melt Nightbreeze's face off.
There was literally bags of poop thrown around.
multiple times.
I forgot about the bag of shit. Jesus.
Oh, and I think there was another... I think that one guard from the town was also there somehow. And he got a bag. Nightbreeze also threw a bag of crap at him.
Yeah, but I'm kind of...
Yeah.
So that is kind of important to note. Cecil is someone who is the right hand to someone on the Council of Nine. He came to talk to them. The adventurers don't like him very much. Nightbreeze threw a bag of poop at him. When that happened, Nightbreeze noticed something odd about this person.
That Nightbreeze was the only one who saw and didn't share.
Again. Didn't share anything. Noticed something very odd about this person, and we'll keep that as... Oh, no. Do we say it?
You'll hear it eventually.
Yeah, so
let's just wait for then.
Yeah, so noticed something odd about this person. So the next day, the adventurers choose not to heed the Order of the Raven's call, and they decide to go try and help the king, which they do. They all touch the note. They're brought into the Shadow Realm. They fight a... giant creature with some eye stalks,
which we kill in like not even before it gets to move.
Yeah, it was pretty fast. One other important thing to note: I have overpowered these characters with magical items because I'm a huge magical item fan, and I wanted to see how much it would break 5e. And surprisingly, a lot.
We don't have those yet. We do not have those yet of this retelling.
Yeah. So they decide to go. They fight the three, two, one. They decide to fight this creature. They kill it. They save the king's spirit from a mirror, at which point they are called back, and a portal opens to the mortal realm.
You forgot one thing, though.
You forgot Cecil.
Oh, right. So I'll go back to the beginning of that. So there, I'm gonna edit this as I go. I'm gonna listen to all this and edit it at once. So, 3, 2, 1. So they enter the Shadow Realm. They fight a creature with some giant eye stalks. They kill it
pretty fast.
Then another creature appears, which is a slod, which has something that Nightbreeze had noticed about it before, but didn't share with the party. They kill said slod and find out that it is Cecil. Because the body reverts to being Cecil.
No, it was Cecil, then he transformed.
Oh, damn it. I've been drinking too much already.
And then he knocks up our paladin.
Okay, wait, Wade, why don't you take this one over for a second?
Yeah, we go into the long hallway that was a castle in the Shadow Realm. We see, like, this image of the crystal that we saw in the dungeon with shadows going in, monsters coming out, or vice versa, whatever it was. We enter a large room. We see this big floating head, which screams, and behind it was a giant mirror. The floating head screams into our heads with telepathy or something like that. Your souls belong to me or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We then proceed to kill it using about 3 critical hits off 1 spell and a lightning breath. It proceeds to turn to ash. Then Cecil, his name is, I think, comes in, says something supposed to be intimidating. He transforms. Then our paladin runs up, gets hit by a single claw, and gets impregnated. Then we proceed to kill him again. And then we go to the mirror, and our ranger has a very bright idea of getting trapped inside the mirror. And we start pulling people out of it by hand, because that's what you have to do, saving our ranger for last. Because, well, he's the king killer. He got us into this mess. We got to torture him somehow.
He's gonna get us out. Yep.
And then we proceed to smash the mirror, debating whether or not to leave Nightbreeze in it. And there was a statue behind the mirror that...
Well, it was holding the mirror.
Yeah, that we smashed his arms to smash the mirror.
Yeah.
But before we did that, the king blew a whistle to open a portal to get us all back. Then we smashed it, and as we were leaving, it looked like it was coming. The statue looked like it was coming alive. And then we were back in the king's chambers.
That's a good recollection. All right, so... Everyone is rejoicing that the king is back alive. The king thanks the adventurers. He understands that it was never their intent to kill him, and that it was just a mistaken fate. The king grants them some gifts.
Which is how I get my skirt.
Mm-hmm.
I got my skirt and a philanter of love that has yet to be used.
Okay. Paris? Paris.
Sorry, I was muted.
Okay.
Paris received a necklace of prayer beads,
which he rolled a 19 on and got a very rare spell that is not supposed to be available to the party yet, which they use a lot.
Actually, it's not even available to the party by normal means.
Yeah.
Yeah. The prayer bead that they're talking about in particular is one of Windwalk. Paris also received a whistle of a message that he can send a long distance communication with once per day.
To the other whistle, which is held by the lead cleric.
Alvarez
at Avisac.
Yep.
Torin, what did you get?
Torin actually received an axe of vengeance, which is actually a cursed axe that he is now bound to. It's mostly just a really big badass axe. And he also got his favorite thing in the whole wide world, which is a flask of unending ale, which has 3 different command words, which are drunk,
which just fills the 1 gallon jug with ale, sloshed, which makes it overflow with 2 gallons of ale, and then turnt, which creates a 30-gallon geyser that is 30 feet long and 1 foot wide and can really actually mess people up. And it makes him happier than it probably should. But yeah, he got that.
All right, and then Stark.
Stark got a sword of wounding, which allows him to basically stack damage over time on his enemies, and he also got a magic crystal, which the cleric gave him to counteract the effects of the slod.
Mm-hmm. So basically stopping him from becoming a slod or one bursting from his stomach or whatever you could assume from that.
Yeah.
So at this point, the adventurers are brought before the Council of Nine again. Some of them are against them, notably Siltaric.
Well, actually, some of the Council of Nine are actually missing.
Yes, some of the Council of Nine are missing. The people that are there are Siltaric Kassab, whose right-hand person was Cecil, the one that they found in the...
I thought they were gone. I thought they were...
Oh, shit, they were, because that's when you guys met her before. That's how you met her. I should have brought that up a little bit ago. Sorry.
Yeah, we only met with the council.
People will get to figure that out. I don't want to go too deep into all this. So yeah, let me go back.
I probably have the best memory out of the group, so...
Yeah, even me as the DM, I'm shitty. So the people that were there were from good parts of the realm. Or not good parts of the realm. They were from different areas around the realm, and they had different problems that they needed dealt with. Notably, Weedale, which was having a madness spreading through the city, and the floating city of Steebrook, which is starting to sink because the magic was going away. Somehow they didn't know. There were a couple other requests for help, but the adventurers chose not to take those paths. They only had a certain amount of time, and so they chose...
Wasn't there one between Avisac and
there is,
Weedale,
but you guys,
or?
There's a few of them, but you'll learn about those in the upcoming campaign, because it's not...
No, I mean, I thought there was a town that we chose to help between Avisac and Weedale. Was there not?
No.
Yeah.
No. Yes, there was.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Doladon.
Where we fought the Doladon ogre. First.
Yep.
Right, that one.
Which we actually need to go back to.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping this would remind you guys. So,
we had to remind you.
Yeah. No, I remembered this one because now that you guys... Okay. Pause thing. Now that you guys have the relic, you need to go back and take care of that shit, or else it's just going to be sitting in the center of their town.
Yeah.
Unpause. I'm trying to remember this all on the fly. So,
yeah, so are we.
So...
Which is why I said I have the best memory, so I'm just going to remind you or correct you as we go.
Please do. Make me look shitty as a DM, which is fair. I should be better than this.
No, you're just drunk.
A little bit. So the adventurers decide to follow the King's Road up to Doladon, and their plan is to go from Doladon to a city called Weedale, and then up to the floating city of Steebrook, because that's a fairly straightforward path they could hit to take care of some of the issues. When they get to Doladon, it's completely dark out. All of the remaining people of the city, which is not very many, are hiding on the edge of the forest. And the adventurers have a conversation with them, find out that there was ogres invading and all sorts of stuff, and then all of a sudden a magical darkness took the town and many, many people died. So they decided to go to Doladon, where they found a portal being opened by a black ogre, or a shadowy ogre.
We did find out that the people of Doladon were super racist.
No, only one of them was super racist.
The entire town of Doladon was super racist.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that...
There were dragonborn in that town.
Everyone but the dragonborn were super racist.
I'm just going to say that only one of them was super racist, but...
Here,
what you will.
He just...
Because you guys have to go back there. Maybe we'll rehash that experience. Oh, another thing, the adventurers did receive something from the king. It was basically a signet that's called the Mark of the Fallen, that the adventurers could, it kind of shows that it was a favor from the king.
And Devin was the first one to show his to shut the guys up.
Yeah, it's basically like, here, fuck you, the king gave this to me, don't mess with me, kind of carry a favor. So yeah. They go in... No, sorry.
I was going to say, he also, when he gave us those, he also gave us a large plot of land outside the city.
Oh, that's also very important. Yes.
Which you want to name New Weedale for some reason?
Yeah, because Tora thought it was hilarious that it was called Weed Ale.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, shit.
They have a 10-mile square plot of land just north of Avisac that they have named New Weed Ale. There's a small tavern on it that they have not they have not delved into anything else about it.
Except for Paris, because he's...
Paris likes to call himself, yeah. So,
what did you call yourself when you only owned that?
One Earl part Paris. Of
that? Earl Paris. Oh, you called yourself that afterwards, too. So
no, Devin calls him Baron though, because yeah. Baron is apparently the lowest ranking you can have.
But so, Devin Baron doesn't actually know that in character.
Eh, it still sounds better than Earl or Duke. Well, actually, Duke's kind of funny.
So they go to they're in Doladon. They find out a shadowy ogre is opening a portal. They battle said ogre and stop it from opening the portal, but find out that they are unable to close it.
Or do anything about it.
Do anything about it whatsoever. Except
after about an hour worth of trying through just pure brute force methods.
So after that, Stark notices the piece of relic fragment that he has kind of vibrating on his person, and he takes it out. And he's able to peer through one of the pieces of the remaining crystal in the end of it, and look through it, and he can see a keyhole at the top of the portal. And he knows that his relic was a key, but he doesn't have all the pieces to it. So, the adventurers, without anything else to do, leave the city and nothing else happens.
Well, no, we can't
I know.
Say that.
I'm aware. I tried to gloss over it because me as a DM made a mistake and decided that it might. Nothing was going to happen with this. Torin, would you like to explain to us what happened after you guys decided you couldn't do anything else with the portal?
Well, we were left in a city that was abandoned and
whose people were just outside the city walls
and were super racist.
Only so, one person was racist.
You know, I agree to disagree on the quantity of people who are racist. But anyway, we kind of decided that the only logical course of action, and we being me and the ranger who is no longer a part of this party.
No, the ranger only agreed. The ranger doesn't really think. So it was entirely you.
All right, well, whatever. I decided that... Well, I don't really like these people, and this town is completely empty, so I might have robbed a bank and a magic shop. And I stole probably a significantly more gold than our DM was willing to introduce into the world.
How much gold was that? 75,000?
Roughly 64,000 gold.
Okay.
And that doesn't include the magic items I stole.
Or the crown.
Yeah, that's also true. I did steal that, too.
So Torin basically ends up walking out of the city like a pimp. He's got a crown on. He's got, you know, a cape on.
I did have a cloak, and I had 5 different rings on my fingers as well. I was very pimped out.
So in lieu of going over all that when it happens, at the time, Torin didn't know what these items did. What he ended up robbing was the magic shop was basically a trick shop or, you know, a prank shop of magic items. So the items that he came across were a ring of fish attraction. So whenever he approaches the water with this ring, fish just kind of babble out and try and bite at the ring. And it could be whatever fish are in like a 30-foot vicinity just come swimming and try and that's their main prerogative. There was a cloak that attracted arrows. So anyone who was wearing it, the arrows would veer direction and attack that person. There was a ring that whoever read the inscription was given a horrible deformity to their face.
Once again, Nightbreeze.
Yeah, Nightbreeze, who decided to do that. There was a scarf that didn't come into play, and Nightbreeze had left with it, so it's no longer with the party. And I'm trying to remember the last one.
The ring of signatures.
Oh, there was the
yes.
The ring of bureaucracy.
The ring of bureaucracy, which yep. Whenever Torin would like to make an attack, a pile of papers would appear in front of him, and he would have to spend an action signing them in order to swing his axe.
Which was a lot of fun to discover mid combat.
Paris still has that ring, in fact.
Not wearing it, just
have it. Yeah, I have it. I'm not wearing it, but
so they decide to leave. I'm sorry. Should I go?
You're good.
Okay, so they decide to leave Dolodon. They proceed to Weedale. When they arrive, they find out that there's a madness striking the town. They are asked to go into the mountains and discover the source of the madness. They choose to go to a tower in the mountains, which is, it took them a couple weeks to get up there. There was a labyrinth they had to go through.
A couple spider things we had to find.
Yeah, some, yep.
And one trap to infuriate the dungeon master with.
Yep, so this is when the adventurers discovered that they could use Cloud Walk to basically subvert my creations, and I decided to start figuring out how to lay the smackdown on that a little bit. But
which he then decided to nerf with
yes.
Walk.
I wouldn't say nerf. It's still just as powerful.
Yeah, but we can only change once.
Yes, okay, so in the campaign they can only stop using Windwalk, or they can only use Windwalk once. If they are in Windwalk, if they come out of it, they cannot reassume Cloud Form until the next time they can cast it, which I think is okay. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
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 Basically pigeonholes us into using it for fast travel.
Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah, which is fine, because we ended up in a combat with Devin in Cloud Form, which was less than ideal.
Yeah.
Hey, if I wasn't in Cloud Form, you'd all be dead.
We might have killed it a lot faster, though.
So,
debatable.
They go through this labyrinth. They come that has a bunch of snakes in it, and they finally make their way into the basement of this tower. They fight cultists all the way up, and when they get to the top, who wants to take this one?
Ben.
All right. So we get to the top, you know, wading through cultists as we mow them down. As we get to the top, we come to this room, and we hear a woman's voice that we recognize on the other side of it. And we open the door, and we see the image of Siliqui speaking to a giant eye.
I thought it was a mass of eyeballs.
Then the form Siliqui turns around, recognizes the adventurers, and dissipates into mist. This is the point when the adventurers realize that Siliqui has been against them the entire time.
Yeah, she did mention, I think, something about, like, you know, I tricked them into going into the Lost City, and they somehow survived that. And
yep.
Everything we've thrown against them has failed.
Failed, yep. Do not fail me.
Proceeds Devin to immediately hate her guts.
I think everybody hates her guts because everybody trusted her. So the adventurers try and figure out what's going on with this eye. It turns into a dragon, and then it kind of warps some of the minds of the people there.
Quick question before we get into that. Mm-hmm. We have a flashback of sorts.
We did. We kind of had a flashback in the past. I'm not going to cover that in this one, though.
Fair enough.
Just because that would deviate completely from what we're trying to do, and we're reaching a long episode as we speak right now with this.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm just going to kind of blow through the rest of it now. So they battle this, which turns out to be this creature, which turns out to be a Medusa, Wizard of Oz style, controlling a manifestation in the center of the room. They kill the Medusa, but would not without Stark being paralyzed and petrified and turned to stone.
Another almost, thing wrong with
almost instantly.
he was petrified within the first two rounds of combat. The adventurers defeat him. They carry Stark down, find a decrepit wagon, put him in it, bring him back down to the city of Weedale, find out everything's okay. Except for there is a group of Arakoa that the city had seen flying away. They captured and imprisoned them, thinking them being the problem, and the adventurers told the city otherwise. So the Arakoa were eventually freed, and the adventurers were free to go do their next adventure.
After Stark was restored.
Yes, yeah. Stark was restored. So the adventurers, and I'm going to gloss over another part of this, but the adventurers decide to go to Steebrook, which is the city that's sinking. It was a magical floating city, but it's starting to sink, and they want to go find out why. So they get to Steebrook.
We kind of left Nightbreeze in the basement of that tower.
Yes, Nightbreeze has been missing from that point. No one really knows. I'm sure that a lot of the party is happier that Nightbreeze isn't there, but he has not been seen in quite some time. So the adventurers decide to travel to the floating city of Steebrook. They get there, and they discover that there used to be a lake below the floating city that is no longer there. Steebrook has a mage school on it, which is the most renowned mage school in the realm, and it's also an entire city. Adventurers talk with Darius, who is not only the leader of the city, but he's also the headmaster of the mage's school. He tells them that
Sit on the council?
Yes. So this is Darius Dawntracker. He sits on the council because he runs the city, and he also heads the mage school. But he says that he thinks that the city is floating because the lake no longer has the water that was kind of a thing that was separating them, creating some sort of magical barrier keeping the city afloat, which the adventurers learn later was not the case. He was just not capable of doing it right. But nonetheless, the water was gone from the lake below. So the adventurers decided to travel to figure out what was blocking the water. They encountered a dragon. They battled the dragon, killed the dragon. Stark found a piece of his relic.
Devin found a war wand plus one.
Mm-hmm. Torin found a ring of fish command. So now not only does he have
was a trident of speaking to fish.
So he not only summoned fish with his ring, but he can also speak to them now. So Torin is, for all intents and purposes, Aquaman.
We also proceeded to taxidermy said dragon.
You may have proceeded to taxidermy. Torin decided to remove the head of the dragon, which we'll talk about what I did later, I guess.
And also kindly asked you to separate its limbs for
me. We're reaching the end, so
yeah.
The adventurers find that there was a wall of ice because it was an ice dragon blocking the flow of water. They released it. The lake filled. They got back into the city. Everybody was happy and rejoicing until the adventurers found out that somewhere below the city in the tunnels was something that was attacking the guards. Like 45 guards were missing. So the adventurers went to look, at which point Siliqui appeared, threw the head of Darius at them, and said, "Good luck, you know. I finally got you," created a wall of stone behind them, and they were trapped in a room with these massive under spiders creatures, which the party quickly dispatched and found their way back out of the catacombs up to the city where they discovered it was under attack. And I think that's where we start our adventure.
If that's where you're saying we started it.
Because the next episode starts. Yeah, that's where the adventure starts. So, hopefully you guys will enjoy this campaign. We've all put a lot of work into it, but it's also a lot of fun, so just kind of bear with us, and if you have any questions, go ahead and check our website. We'll try and get a forums going where you can ask some questions.
We actually have a feedback form live on the website. You can submit your feedback, and we will read it live here on the podcast.
If we like it.
Yeah, I mean, unless you just, like, send us, like, weird shit. Like, we're not going to read weird shit.
Or hate it mail. Depends on how funny it is.
It's true. It's that there's a thin line between really weird and creepy and funny.
So
I think I walk that line every day.
Yeah, I think this campaign walks that line. So you can tweet at us at Tabletop Champs. What are your guys' Twitter handles?
Go ahead.
You can follow Scott/Paris on Twitter at ElanondRPG.
You can follow Kyle on Twitter at Fung.
All right, and you can also give us 5-star reviews on iTunes. Unless someone does, anybody else have a Twitter? I can't remember.
I think that's it.
Cool. Yeah, please give us 5-star reviews on iTunes. We will much appreciate them. If it's not 5 stars. I don't even want to say don't leave it. That's a dick move. Kyle, why don't you say it?
But seriously, don't leave it. Here's the best way to say it. If you love the podcast, leave us 5 stars. And if you hate the podcast, go to our website, tabletopchampions.com. We've got a feedback form. Tell us why you hate it. We'll talk about it. We'll take it to heart. But if you put it on iTunes, it totally bones us. So don't do it.
So... anything else, guys?
No.
All right. Well, then we'll see you shortly for our first adventure of the Tabletop Champions podcast.
Good night.
Toodles.
Bye.
Salutations.
Salutations is for greetings and salutations. It's an intro, not an outro.
They could be an outro. Sean. You know what? I tried.
Leave all of this in.